We're gonna get started here. So I'm Jesse Krems, aka Agent X. You might know me from such things as DEF CON and the Hacker Foundation, and being just a loud mouth. This is Nick, Bruce, Christian. These people work with me on the board. Nick's co-founder. Bruce is just here because he wants to touch my butt. So I'm gonna talk about what the foundation does, what the application process is, and problems that we're interested in tackling and thinking about. So what does the foundation do? Provide support, organizational services for technology projects that benefit people. And when we say benefit people, we're not meaning benefit just to you. It's important that we're thinking about some other things, and some of those spin-offs being we benefit people that are outside our community. What happens, so we have 501c3 financial oversight status, or financial 501c3 oversight for our projects, exempt status. This is why I have Nick. He knows these things. We do legal support for operations. We don't bail you out if you're in the EFF or if you get busted and you need to be busted out by the EFF. We do operational legal support. We look over your contracts, stuff like that. We do management support. So we're like, what's your goals? What you're going to do? What's your tasks? And we do marketing and sourcing, which means we price T-shirts and we look at ways we can get your name out there. So some of the qualities that that hackers have that we think are useful to other people, and usually it's in the projects you do. You're all pretty comfortable with technology. Surprise, surprise. How'd that happen? You're quick on the uptake. Something new comes out, you're getting into it, you're interested in it. Unlike some geeks who live at home, stay at home, and don't come out for cons, you're social geeks, so you actually have some awareness about the world around you and this idea of a hacker community. And you have a certain rogue element. Certain rules don't apply to you. You don't care. This is really wonderful. We love this. And in general, it's a very creative bunch. So the foundation is built around projects. And projects are pretty much the cornerstones and the building blocks of what everything we do is. Everything's a project to us. We always say, what's a project? What's a project? Projects focus on specific parts of larger issues. So a project isn't, I want to eradicate evil in the world. We thought about that, but it's a little big. So pick out a choice part of that and pick out evil, and then find your bit of evil, and then figure out what part of evil you want to take on. Projects have to meet the legal standards set forth by the IRS, and they have to be approved by the board of directors and, you know, meet our approval. Projects operate in the core values of the foundation. That means that they're sustainable. They're going to last longer than some of the projects we've seen or talked about. We want to see them lasting not a year, not 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. And we want to see them grow, mature, and hopefully get their wings and leave us and maybe be their own nonprofit or business entity. We want equal access for all. We're not trying to discriminate against anyone. So if you're going to say, we're just going to serve these people, we're going to say, we like collaborative development. We want you to work with other people developing tools, projects, technology. And we also want you to work with people that are going to end up using your tools in the end. When I start talking about a specific project, we'll talk a little about this. We want stuff that's innovative. We're young. We're hip. We want to see new things. We don't want to see old stuff. Old stuff is boring and lame. And we want something that's altruistic, that serves other people. Serving yourself, we could do that, but it's really not very useful. And the side benefit of benefiting other people is that we look good to them. CCC looks good to the general public because they do things that the general public benefits from. We haven't been known for doing that. We've been known for taking down Citibank.
As a hypothetical example.
No. Remember how we got blamed for that Russian dude who took like a penny out of everything? Evil hacker?
Oh, yeah.
That's us. Who the evil?
You mean hackers, not the Hacker Foundation.
No, not the Hacker Foundation. Thank God. I didn't even catch that. Yeah, no, the Hacker Foundation.
Clarify.
Sorry.
As you're aware, I recommend you be a little clearer, fuckwad.
Thank you. So this is a beginning of the project application flow. People come to me going, this sounds really great. What am I going to do? I said, well, come to the talk at 5. But why don't you observe a problem and get fired up about it? And this is not a problem that is like a flash in the pan problem, like, ooh, this is stupid, but I don't want to. But you don't think about it in 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years. If you think about it every day or comes back to you over and over and over again, then it's a problem. It's a real problem that you can actually work on. Look for problems that benefit a lot of people, not a small group of people. When I say a lot, I mean like thousands and thousands. Think about stuff that's fixable with tech or that enhances knowledge transfer. You're probably not going to have a lot of, you know, success doing technology work to mitigate the disaster or the problem that is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's not really our forte. Grok the problem, really get in it, become the local expert, understand what's going on there. If you are not the smartest person in the room about that issue, then bone up. And when I mean local expert, I don't mean you have to come to international conferences and be the smartest guy. But be the smartest guy in your town, or at least get all the books you can lay hands on. Figure out what part of that problem you're going to work on and go for that one little bit. Don't go for the whole shebang. So this is a global landmine map. This is an example of a big global problem. There are landmines in most every country in the world that has had a major war in the last 75 years. So if you look at this, you'll see that there's a little country called Egypt right here. Egypt has the most mines of any nation in the world. And they were put there 50 years ago. I'm not hitting on you. But by both the Axis and Allies during World War II, and the Egyptian government doesn't care because they're not in Cairo. They're not in the main part of the country. So they're floating around there in the desert. You're a tourist. You're a Bedouin. You're having a grand time out there in the desert, the sands. You're doing your whole Lawrence of Arabia. And you lose your leg. To put that in perspective, how many people are in this room? About, what, 50? Not that many?
40.
Okay, 2% of us are dead in the last day. If we all died today, 2% of us, that person would be from landmine deaths. In North America, where you notice we don't have a lot of landmine problems, 1 in 22,000 are injured from landmines. So it's a big international problem. Landmines, victims of landmines, prosthetics. Landmines are pretty bad. So what the fuck are we going to do? We've got these landmines in the ground. They're hard to find. They explode. Deadly and dangerous. You got to find them. You got to track them. And you got to remove them. All these problems have some major technological bend to them. So you got to find them first off. Accidental human encounter is one of the number one ways you find a mine. It's also the really shitty way. You're going to lose a limb. You're going to die. These funny little shoes here were developed by Frog Design out of California for from people that, you know, disarm mines. So they don't, when they're walking into a minefield, you don't blow them up. That's technology in action there. This is the definition of a really bad job. It's going to be hot, really hot, because most mines are in the equatorial region. You're going to get down your hands and knees. You're going to have a meter-wide swath, which is a little bigger than that. And you're going to probe every inch of the dirt looking for something that you're not supposed to poke, because it might blow up. These guys have a relatively low death rate, surprisingly. Construction workers kill themselves more often. But I was talking to somebody here, and they were telling me about somebody they knew who used to disarm mines in the Sinai Desert.
That was me.
That was you. Thank you.
Yeah, I worked with a guy who used to be in the Israeli Army, and he was a weapons demolition guy, and told stories about how they would be out there in the desert in 120 degrees wearing a full demining outfit.
That is not a full demining outfit, by the way. That's the crappy
mining. People would get careless. They were removing anti-tank mines that weigh 70 pounds that typically you need two people to try and even carry one of them. Part of their technique was once they did find them, and I guess they had maps, but they weren't very accurate. There were certain ones that had been booby-trapped, so if you tried to remove them...
Actually, that's a built-in feature. That's standard.
Well, not all of them had them activated, and somebody got careless and just didn't want to take the time anymore. They were using these long poles to get underneath it to sort of pry it up and out of the ground, and sure enough, the poor guy just, turned into red mist and end the story.
Right. So mining's really dangerous work, and this is the way you usually find them. So the other very common way, and when I was doing research for this little presentation, I found many, many wonderful pictures of sheep, camels, horses, blown up from mines. Big problem because, A, now you have a dead goat in a field that was going to feed you this winter. And two, you can't do anything. You know there's a minefield there, but what if the sheep are grazing there? Or that's your new, or that's this area's pasture land. Geological movement. There's a lot of mines in the desert. You can find them in a couple ways. One of them is by them coming out of the sand dune and rolling onto the road. And plants. This is actually something new that's going on. This is an example of something we'd love to be involved with, but it's actually being developed by a private organization, I believe, from Sweden. It's thalecress, which is this plant here, which they genetically engineered to turn red in the presence of NO2. And then they were smart, and because unlike bringing kudzu to America and having it take over, they said, okay, we're also going to dwarf its ability to mutate and reproduce with other plants it finds. So you can just spread this stuff around, and what happens is you end up with these nice little red plants saying, don't fucking step on me. This is the mechanical detectors is pretty common. Metal detectors, a lot of landmines aren't metallic anymore. I was talking with a bomb expert from the FBI about mines, and I was like, well, we could develop a low-cost metal detector, right? He's like, we don't make mines out of metal anymore. I go, they made mines that are metallic, or have large metallic components in the last, 10 years, or actually last 20 years. Splice is a project called Self-Powering Locator and Identifier of Concealed Equipment. It's a private, proprietary piece of equipment, but essentially what it does is it uses radio equipment and radio waves. And when there's a receiver coil and an antenna coil, and when the panel sweeps over the a foreign object in a medium, it'll change the tone and you know something's there. It could be a big rock, or it could be a mine. Robots. There's a couple robots out there used for detection, but it's fairly rare. There's not a lot of reason to do it, and it's very expensive. And remote imaging, there's new techniques being developed to find mines using remote, satellites. You just look at the soil and do spectrum analysis. So you found some mines, and you're like, yeah, there's a mine right there. Sweet. Don't step on that. So you got to look it up. I went to try to find some mines on Google Earth. There's no minefields on Google Earth. You look around, it's really hard to get, good, up-to-date global data, GIS information about mine locations, or anything for that matter. This is somebody who's speaking to me about asset tracking. Mines are an asset to somebody, so if you can find them, that'd be great. These are just some of the small issues you're going to have to overcome just in doing a minefield search function. You need a clearly searchable geographic information system. It's got to have the right information in it. It's got to be localized so the people that are reading it can read it. And, you know, they don't have fiber everywhere. So it's got to be really low bandwidth. And then you got to publish this information, build infrastructure to distribute that information. ICT, information communications technology, is not very well developed in a lot of places where there are a lot of mines. So publishing systems, infrastructure systems to move that around, and then you got to teach and train people to use it. All of these and most everything else I've talked about could be a project in the foundation. So let's talk about blowing shit up, because I like to do that. You can destroy them in place. That's pretty common. And when they destroy them in place, there's one or two ways they do it. They can literally blow it up where it is, or they get it out of the ground. They dig it up. They disarm it if they can. They dig it up, and they take it, and they put it in a big stockpile, and they blow it up. Or you remove this. This is kind of a tricky picture to see. This is a rocket that's going to be fired across a minefield. It's going to tether a deck cord behind it. It's going to blow a meter-wide swath. That's pretty good. You'll notice there are some Army guys here. Is anyone here in the military or was in the military and wants to admit it? Okay, one guy. You have to. You know, I'm sure. The U.S. government only requires an 80% clearance rate for mines. So if you're ever in that position where they're like, we just cleared the minefield, go in! Tread lightly.
Follow the guy in front of you.
Follow the guy in front of you. Now, the UN requires 99.6, which is much, much higher. And a lot of demining technology has been developed by the military and brought down through, like, cost is through is for military use, so it's not so hot, as I like to say.
Yeah, I got a comment on that, too.
Yeah.
They're really screwed when they want the boom out there and it doesn't that port doesn't ignite.
Yeah.
It's called the metal runner run because some poor dumbass, E3, E4, is going to now run his ass out there very quickly, pop another blast from the cap on it, and run like hell before it detonates.
Yeah. It's. Yeah. This is one of the reasons never to join the
army. They usually don't make it out alive, that's why I felt it was like one of
them. Yeah. Yeah, mine clearing sucks. And it's rarely done. That's the other thing that's kind of fascinating. Is we plant mines all the time. We planted mines. I think we planted some mines for Afghanistan. I know we did some for Iraq. We didn't really care where we put them. Chechnya, which hadn't seen that much, that whole Serbian war, didn't see that much action in terms of mine lane during World War II, but it saw a lot in the recent conflict, so they're digging mines out of there all the time right now. They're still digging mines out of France, by the way, on the rate of 2 a day. Farmers run into them. They don't go off, or they do go off. Sometimes there's just a mustard gas canister, too. Those are always really good. So there's mechanical excavators that drive around. This just happens to be I think it's a Saracen unit. So you sit in that little cab, and you whip the ground really hard, and it churns up the ground in front of you, and it blows up mines. Now, of course, one of the issues with this is that when a mine goes off, it's an explosive device. It lays out a lot of nasty chemicals into the ground, which then bleed into your groundwater. So that's another problem. But mines you're going to step on or slow groundwater problem. Pick one. Robots. Robots are used a lot for things like this, where it's not a mine, it's a relatively tame object you can deal with. This is actually a PackBot, I believe, made by the same people that make your Roomba. So if you have one of those...
That's confirmed. That is made by
iRobot. Yeah. So robots are incredibly cost prohibitive, and mostly they're used for unexploded ordnance. I didn't initially, when I thought about the landmine problem, I didn't even want to get involved with the whole unexploded ordnance issue, because it was like, oh, that's a whole other batch, because you need to manipulate weird objects and blow them off. And literally the first thing that bomb tech from the FBI said was, well, hey, guess what? That's not a choice, because the other thing that gets dropped on a battlefield is bomblets, which are, and so, and those, I'll get to that in a second, but bomblets are really annoying because they don't go off. They just stay there. The other thing that's going on is a lot of technology, self-deactivating mines. The idea is you can send a signal out and the mines turn themselves off. They're still in the ground. They're still full of explosives, but they don't go off. Now, so you're buying munitions, you're U.S. government, you're actually almost any government, you're buying munitions, bullets, bombs, mines. You can expect, and it's usually contracted, a 10% failure rate is acceptable. So you shoot the bullet, doesn't go off. Whatever. If you have a minefield with 1,000 mines in it, and you have a 10% failure rate, you got a shitload of mines in the field, they're still live. And that's a safe field. Go plant there. Here's some seeds. So, and then there's a whole bunch of other issues, ways to get it. I saw an interesting little thing on eBay, which was this guy wanted to build a robot, a spider robot, with a laser. And it would walk out over the minefield, and it would detect mines, and it would shoot a laser through them and burn them out. Yes. And he won $1 million for his idea. Yeah. Wonderful idea. So landmine issues. And this is one of the things that I keep seeing is that you get into one of these big issues and you see you get into other things. ICT is one that keeps coming up and I think is particularly applicable to our skill sets. Building networks, building backbones, doing all that. A lot of these places don't have anything, and if you get in on the ground floor, you get to be Ma Bell in wherever you're going to be. Prosthetic limbs, you see a really big gamut of prosthetic limbs in the world. You see, you know, your basic, you're walking on wooden crutches to stuff that's being developed out of MIT, which is a multi, multi-use below the knee amputation or above the knee amputation leg. It's got the ferrofluid in it, so the knee swings at different rates depending on what you're doing. It does like 2,000 computational tests a second to make sure it's not going to kick you in the ass. I'm like, well, that's great. A lot of that high-tech stuff is closed source. It's proprietary, and I'm fine with that. I was like, you know what we should do? We should get one of these limbs. We should get a bunch of really smart hardware hackers all in a room. We'll reverse engineer the thing, and open source it. That doesn't help very much in the long run. But those are the kinds of things that kind of could be useful, and I think are tons of fun, because I do want to build the bionic man. I'm getting older, and eventually I'd like to be able to, leap tall buildings with a single bound. Global awareness and education, getting the word out. It's web publishing stuff. Whatever. Policy change. This is something that is big on a lot of people's horizons. It's affecting national policy. It's not something we've been known to do. We don't go in and say, hey, it's a bad idea. And then getting into the whole side task of dealing with unexploded ordnance, which is another big ball of wax. Clip art. Focus on the part that interests you. A lot of people are like, well, cool, but I don't care. I don't know what I want. I'm like, well, pick another problem. Find something that really grabs you, is interesting. If it's interesting to you, it supports your skill set, and your buddies think it's cool, you should do it. If it's not all those things, don't get sucked into something that you're not interested in. And here's just a big, long list of problems that are affect everybody. I always top out with clean water. You go anywhere, there's never enough clean water. ICT, backhaul networks, phone networks. You can't run a country, you can't govern anything, you can't make a new civil society. You can't even have a civil society here if the power goes out. So doing that kind of stuff, and communications control. Local community technology support. One of the things the foundation does is we're helping the Boys and Girls Club of North Chicago with their programs. And that's something you can do in your local community. It's good local PR, and it's easy to do. You might already be doing it. Transportation and engineering, or energy. There's a lot of transportation problems. You might notice that peak oil is becoming kind of a topic, and the price keeps going up, and America's getting a little verklempt about that. That's a whole bundle of wax there that you can just have tons of fun with and make a lot of money. Now, we're not in that business, but if you're the local fuel cell expert, someone's going to come knocking eventually. Medical equipment. A lot of medical equipment that's used out there in the world, either in Africa or Louisiana, is fairly expensive and designed for a hospital environment. Well, if you need to, administer drugs in the middle of the Sudan, you're not exactly in a hospital environment. And a lot of this stuff is really expensive, really over and under-engineered for the real world, and not reusable. There's been some really interesting work coming out of out of MIT about just redesigning the whole system you use to deal with diarrhea. It's a big problem. There's no clean drinking water. You're going to get diarrhea, and then you're going to die. Low cost, low power, safe lighting. LED flashlights. Not that complicated. Most people out there in the far-off lands use kerosene lamps or gas lamps. And one of the big problems is that they get the wrong gas in it, and it blows up, and it kills them. That's just stupid. So batteries, low-cost lighting, and then non-for-profit training program. A lot of us need more tech training, but there's no environment for that to happen in. There's a lot of for-profit training programs that you've probably been part of or seen, and we need to develop something that's not nearly as expensive. Textbooks and curriculum. I remember this great quote coming out of Katrina. There have been textbooks published in the last 20 years? We're looking at massively underserved communities out there in the world, and you're looking at curriculums that are outdated. It's a fact of life, and the whole way the curriculum thing is structured is kind of awkward, and It's there's a lot of copy right there. And there's also just literally the distribution of textbooks is archaic. Transparent electronic voting. Diebold can't get it right, but we trust them with our money. We need to, and when I say we, I literally mean backer community, needs to come up with a voting system. Because if we can trust it, and we can manage to sell it to the real world, it's actually going to work. Open source ambulatory assistance devices. Wheelchairs are proprietary. Wheelchair design is generally proprietary. I'm trying to remember the name of it. Dean Cannon's stair roving robot. Very cool. It overcomes a lot of problems. It's really, really, really expensive. I've bought all the automotive, all of my motorcycles cost less than one of those. So that's just one of the many problems out there. Free flow of information. China, the Great Wall of China, big problem. There's lots of restrictive countries out there that are they're not letting things go through, which is just stupid. Humanitarian support. There's a lot of humanitarian agencies out there. Pretty much everything in the UN is really low tech and underfunded, and you wonder why they're ineffectual sometimes. They need a lot of help, and that's actually where the Hacker Foundation really started out. Was we were like, oh well, we could help people deliver food. That shouldn't be too hard. 3 years later, we're not doing that yet, but we're working towards it. Technology development thinking, the way we think about the way we develop technology as a society, is ripe for a lot of new thinking. Reengineering for the real world, that's talking about like medical devices that are designed for a hospital environment, but not for the real world. Negroponte's big thing, low-cost computing and support infrastructure. If we put all the computers out there, of course they'll be a big success. It's not happening that fast, and I doubt it's going to be a big success because there's no support infrastructure. AIDS and HIV, big problem. It's going to ravage it. It's ravaging Africa right now. If you pick up a newspaper, do a Google search for AIDS and Africa and a politician, and you will see the most horrendous, ignorant statements being made about medical care in a national scale that is astounding. So paperwork sucks, and we hate paperwork. Well, Nick doesn't hate paperwork. I hate paperwork. So what we wanted to do when we came up with the 501c3 package, the nonprofit in a box, was we did all the paperwork for you, and we created a structure and an administrative unit that helps you cut down on all this. So with that in mind, paperwork sucks, and we try to cut down on it. I hate paperwork, and I don't want you to have to do it. I'd rather have you do the work that you want to be doing. So we have an application form. It's pretty basic. It's very simple. It's going to ask you some somewhat probing questions. They're not overly they shouldn't make you bleed, but they should make you think about what you want to do in the long term and the short term. So you're going to fill out that. You're going to send it to us, and we're going to look at that. The foundation has a project review committee. We're going to look at that. We're going to make sure your I's are dotted, your T's are crossed, and you're actually making coherent sentences and saying real things and have really good thinking behind this idea. They're going to review your application. They're going to make sure it's in order. And then it's going to go to the board. And then, like all things that involve paperwork, you're going to get to wait for a while. The board meets once a month. We look at the applications. We'll do one of three things. We'll either sanction it, and boom, you're a nonprofit, and you get many of the bennies that we already talked about. We'll defer, which means we're going to request more information, because something's missing, or there's some bit of controversy or question. Or we're going to reject it because it's a really bad idea, and we don't want to be involved with it. And then you have all of these things already set up for you. And more to come as we grow and build. And that's about it. Does anybody have any questions?
I guess I'm a little confused on how you can put that in the text. How you can put that in the laptop and they don't have reliable power, reliable room.
No, you're...
Several countries, they don't even have home. They still live in friggin' mud huts, and you're going to put a laptop in people's hands and build a Wi-Fi system.
Okay, no, this is a discussion that's actually been going on for quite some time. Is it water or computers? That's the kind of a decision. It's not that anymore. The future is coming too fast. It's water and computers. There are a lot of groups out there that do water, power, roads. And you need a lot of other things to put together that whole package to create a modern civil society beyond, just water, power, and roads. And those are all bits of technology. Now, I don't know if there's a lot of road engineers in here. That's why I didn't put it on the list. I don't know if there's a lot of power engineers in here. But if there are, and we can help, that's a piece of technology we would like to deploy and we'd like to work on. It's not one or the other. It's both, and it's shooting with both barrels. And you're right. And that's one of the reasons I think that Negroponte's $100 laptop thing is not going to work.
It just seems like total bullshit. Like, it's a nice idea, and maybe it's, the kind of resonates with legacy, but at the same point, if you're looking at it, I'm like, I have buddies that are in Iraq that are going around, and like, yeah, you see the cities, but 90% of the country is still living in mud huts up in the freaking nowhere.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, yeah, that's a nice idea for the program to go live in Baghdad and the lodge and the surrounding communities, but 90% of the population of Iraq is not in the city center, but south of the
desert. Right. And that's... Remember I said grand sweeping gestures? I don't want to tackle grand sweeping gestures. That's right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Grand sweeping... I would love it if... I could go, Iraq, no more war. Power works. Sewage system works. Roads, better than the ones we have here. Shouldn't say much. All of that, but I can't. We can pick and choose our battles, and we can pick and choose which skill sets and time and energy we can apply to that problem. And there are bennies to us as a community and to us as an individual for that. And so, yeah, and... When Iraq blew up, and right after the war, I was working with a couple of people looking at what we could do in Basra. And Basra was relatively untouched by the war. It was not blown to shit. Unfortunately, it was dirt poor because it had been, essentially underfunded by Saddam's regime because they told him that he was a dick. Well... Yeah, exactly. And, there's a lot of governments and systems out there that are like that. That being said, so you went into, we looked at specifically at the University of Basra. What could we do to help the people in Basra get up to speed and move from being, oh shit, we've just been invaded by these guys, which makes everyone feel really uncomfortable, to getting back to their normal life. And so... Basra has a huge student population. The University of Basra is one of the best universities there, but it's underfunded, undersupplied, and basically everyone's out of date. They haven't been able to travel. The professors aren't very well trained. There's tons of things you can do to put a university together in a relatively short amount of time. Those are the types of things that we can help with, and that's one of the ways that's one little problem. It affects a small group. Yes?
I have a question in three parts.
Oh, okay, you got to give them to me one at a time.
One at a time, that's fine.
Because somebody else got a two-part question, it's hard.
Three-part. I can write them down on your notes.
No, just tell me.
First, what's kind of the current status of the Hacker Foundation?
We're in like a permanent startup stage right now. That's what I feel like. We have our 501c3 status. We have our board of directors. We're building up our internal capacity. Yeah, don't let them see my... dinner photos. And we have a couple projects on the books, and we're talking to a couple other projects.
What projects are on the books?
I was going to check.
Okay.
Can we talk about them?
No.
Okay. We can't talk about one of them. It's really cool.
Actually, at this
at this juncture?
At this point, since we haven't since we haven't finalized the arrangements, the finances, we've been advised to not talk about it or publicly disclose them.
But that one? Or what about that other one that I talked about earlier?
Which one?
The Boys and Girls Club. The Boys and Girls Club of Chicago?
Yeah,
okay, about that. Yeah. So
that's a support role.
So yeah, we're that's a non-answer. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right.
But we're working on it.
I didn't know if there were like already projects underway.
There are a couple. And we almost everybody on the board had a bunch of projects they want to do, and we've all tabled them because we're working towards what the foundation is getting set up to do, and projects that come into us. So, what we need is volunteers.
Right.
We need some money. Money always helps. And mostly the money is for building up our own internal capacity. Business cards, banners, money to make money, money to run administration, which is really boring. So those are the two, volunteers and money.
That was question number two, actually. So you did a good job of looking at the future of what you guys needed. So
that's why I'm the president.
That's awesome, man. Hail to the chief. So the third question, the open source community has this habit of reinventing the wheel every 3.5 seconds.
Yeah.
Where we're all trying to do like, hey, let's make a new graphical interface for Linux or whatever. And we get 100,000 people spun up on a problem and then another 100,000 people solve it differently. Do you guys have plans to make like a clearinghouse to say, here's all the stuff that's kind of on the table. We're already thinking about, clean water in Zambia and, roads here and this other thing. So if you're thinking about doing something similar,
give us a call.
Blom together a little bit so we can determine if there's critical mass or not. Because it's one thing to have somebody come up and fill an application and be like, yeah, brother, I'm going to go build a road to, wherever.
Timbuktu.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's quite another to have, 55 people say, we're all into road building and we all want to work together.
You know how we talked about that yesterday?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I rolled that into the website.
Okay.
It's in my mental website.
What's the link for that?
You're going to get it for sure. Yeah. And there's two things there. You know how I talked about getting fired up for projects that are long?
Right.
It was so funny. I remember this kid going, dude, I just made my own Linux. See, I got this book, and it was like the Minix book. I was like, well, great, but can I surf the web on it? No. Can I put it on my computer? No. Well, it's not doing me much good. Why don't you run Linux? Just normal Linux instead. And that's the kind of stuff that we're working towards dealing with. It's sustainability. It's got to be long term, and it's got to grow itself over the long period. So we're taking a very long view with the project we try to take on. Does that answer your question?
I guess the question is there a plan to provide some kind of so in your mental website, yes, there is something that says, here, we can get a bunch of people together and shut the jam on this.
Yeah.
The actual website will have that.
Yes.
And that's still in the process of being redesigned.
Do you need website development help as well?
Well, that's what volunteers are.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, volunteers is a broad swath. Like,
okay.
Bro, I can mow lawns, but I can't do a lot of other things. But I hazard to say you don't need a lawn mode. You need, like, websites developed.
Can you get us a cut of the money?
Yeah. Let's not go there.
It's actually the 501c3 thing. That's domestic. That's the annoying part. But there's no international.
Hold on.
A second, let me do it.
501c3 status allows U.S. entities and U.S. taxpayers to donate money to a 501c3 organization and write off that donation against their federal tax liability, their AGI or their gross, their net on their taxes. And then once the 501c3 has the money, it's their responsibility to prove to the IRS that they're using it for exempt purposes. Now, as long as the 501c3 stays out of certain countries under certain circumstances, you can perform humanitarian service wherever you want, but you can use that money for any exempt purpose anywhere in the world under the case law guidelines right now. There are some restrictions, but if you're trying to provide clean water to people that don't have it, the IRS is not going to have a problem with you spending exempt money when you're serving a humanitarian purpose, or when you're serving an open purpose. The thing that they don't like is when you spend money on things that you said you weren't going to spend money on, or spend money on things that you haven't disclosed that you're spending money on. That the 501c3 status sets up a lot of checks and balances. The public can come in and look and see and make sure that what you're doing exactly what you're saying you're doing, that your books are more or less open, and that you're serving the public interest. Yeah, there are a lot of 501c3 organizations out there that are perpetuating fraud. The IRS clamps down on them. They revoke status. But, you know, it's not something, where are you spending the money? The question is, how are you spending the money? And that's the overriding concern. So whether you're doing it domestically or internationally, it depends on what the purpose is that you're doing.
Well, I guess I would just ask, because obviously the bigger issue in other countries, but I know, like, most of my family lives in rural areas.
That's the same problem. That's what's so cool about that.
Do you cover things like that domestically?
Yeah. No, that is the same problem, whether it's here or it's there. You know, and I really don't want to sound like I'm pooping on Alabama here, but Alabama has a lot of problems, and it's funny because a lot of domestic humanitarian groups that do crisis stuff train in Alabama because it looks a lot like places they're going to go in terms of the level of infrastructure and the density of the population and the ability to actually practice there. If you're figuring out how to roll out high speed to Alabama, or in my case, I live in Vermont, we're doing the same thing. That's the same problem as doing it in Chechnya. And if we can make that a package, a module that we can export, all the better. And if we can say we did it, even better. So does that, do you see what I'm getting at?
Oh.
My best friend was poisoned by his well because it was not clean. Clean water is an issue here. When I look at all those problems, they're global problems to me. So, they're in my backyard.
And that's one of the things that we try to resolve in the application process. When you come to the Hacker Foundation, when we're talking about what it is you're doing, trying to pin down things like that, you may have a very specific, narrow focus. You know, you may be thinking about clean water in terms of your friend that got poisoned in the well. You may be thinking about services that you're developing and code you're writing to solve a specific problem that you think might have applications elsewhere. One of the things that we try to do, in addition to getting exempt status, is seeing, well, what other projects can you help? What are the other applications of the tool you're using? You know, is this something that's going to solve a very temporary problem that is perhaps not going to serve the focus that you thought it was going to serve? Or is it something that can contribute to things that are being developed? Is it a way that we can, you know, turn what you think might be a local problem into a global solution?
Right. And the other, one of the other things I try not to say what we don't do. One of the things we don't do right now is disaster response, because you have to be ready for the disaster, and it's pretty hard to do good ad hoc response. I was really impressed by a lot of stuff in terms of tech, by like people like the Prometheus Project, et cetera, et cetera. About what they did in Houston with the radios. There was roadblocks put in their way. That, I think it was the Astrodome, said, you need to have a radio for every family, which was ludicrous. You don't need a radio. Not every family needs a radio. We need to hook into the PA system and broadcast it, and then when we get radios, hand them out equally, but, you know, one for every four families or whatnot. But FEMA was very strict. One radio for everybody. That's how we work here. So they did it. They called Sony and said, we need 10,000 radios and we need them here tomorrow. And Sony said, there you go. That's all well and good, but it expends a lot of energy on some very short-term problem that is a problem that wasn't there, is not a real long-term problem. So we're really... That's a project right there, sir. No, somebody came in and was like, I do assets.
Now you're talking logistics, man. Oh, holy hell. That's a logistics for the whole. I mean, the whole company did that. Things more than move things from one place to the other.
Yeah, exactly. strangely enough, did some research on logistics software, tracking stuff, finding things. There's no open source logistics software. Yeah, we say that a lot, actually. Open source. But that's the whole problem right there, too. There's this other category of things we do that is still being developed. Logistics, and that was kind of like marketing. That was actually one of the things I saw in the marketing things. We do a lot of T-shirt pricing for people. They should be able to do it for themselves, but it takes a certain amount of savvy. And logistics is one of those things. Once you get good at that stuff, that's a skill you can repeat and repeat. If we had a whole team of people here that are hackers all about hacking the logistics system of the world, that's a great asset. We can go to other nonprofits and say, hey, we got these guys. They know what they're doing. You want in on this? You want to trade some resources here? You want to grow? We're hackers, by the way, not criminals. Yeah. Any more questions, Amber? Yes?
You mentioned the Boys and Girls Club.
Mm-hmm.
You guys got any public schools at all?
Not yet. I don't think we couldn't.
This is kind of like a pilot project, so we'll be able to gauge better how to work with other organizations like that based on the level of success we have with it. Nothing is out of the realm of possibility.
Right. I
have to emphasize that we're not here saying this is what we're interested in and this is what we're doing. It's the reason the foundation exists is to allow you to do what you're interested in and do it better and do it with more people and find people who are doing similar or comparable or compatible things. You know, if you're interested in something that we haven't mentioned, we want to help you try to do that if it serves an exempt purpose.
We at least want to hear about it.
I mean, all of these things that we're throwing out are ideas, some of which are in active development, some of which we've just thought would be nice if we get the interest there. If there's an interest level somewhere else, we want to know about it so that we can help you do that.
So I think what's interesting with that is that, as the hacker scene kind of self-organizes anyway. I mean, there's been a couple talks already this weekend about, here's how to run a successful hacker group or, things that have worked and all the problems we've had and whatever. And if you think about, if you spent a quarter of that energy bitching and moaning and partying, doing something for the greater good, we could, as a community, accomplish a lot of stuff. That was kind of, I know when I started this food group, that was one of the goals that I had, is just rope some people together and try to do more as a group than we could as individuals, and we try to do it kind of altruistically and whatever, but very, security focused, if you will, not at some of these greater humanitarian projects. And, we have 30-odd people, and we've been able to do quite a bit without expending, a serious ton of energy. It's been a few people contribute, and then a few others, and whatever. And as long
many pieces loosely joined.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of... Exactly.
Like how the internet works?
Yeah, there you go.
It's cool like that.
So, that's why I think that's outstanding about the Hacker Foundation, is that, now we've got a target with respect to humanitarian issues and some of the greater good projects. And, as a community, we tend to form around common goals anyway. And I think it's just a new common goal. Like, it's, we're getting older, we're reproducing, having kids, becoming domesticated. You go to DEF CON now and they have all these kids T-shirts and things and the onesies and everything, and they're sold out by the second day because all the hackers have reproduced and are buying hacker gear for their kids. So clearly there's some sense of, hey.
That is so creepy. Creepy.
Yeah, we're maturing and we gotta
like fine wine. Like fine wine.
We are legacy or are we leaving? Okay.
No, that's totally true. And that was the thing that, what irked me for a long time is people were like, oh, hackers, they don't do anything but break into stuff. And I was like, well.
And party.
Yeah. Which is fine when you're 21. But when you're 35 or older, it's, it's like Mick Jagger. That's creepy. It's like a skeleton with leather on stage. There's a certain time when you gotta become an adult, and that's one of the things that, and part of that is giving back, and those people will reciprocate it. And it's pretty weird, actually. I'm often surprised. I'm like, hey, let me help you fix your computer. No reason why I'm doing this other than, and I do my little thing. And I'm like, wow, that's great. And it just spreads and spreads and spreads and spreads. And then I'm like the nonprofit computer guy. And I'm really busy all of a sudden, which is another issue. But that's you choose what you want to do. Any more questions? Anybody? All the way in the back, yes. This is like one of our board meetings. What are our goals for the next 2 months? He wants to answer.
Yeah, I'm going
to
take that.
Okay.
A lot of it's internal right now because we're setting up donation mechanisms for our projects. We're setting up a lot of the diligence things over. I guess the most important thing we need to do over the next 2 months is make sure that the projects that are on board that we're supporting have everything there, to make sure that we have all the requisite documentation so that they know what our expectations of them are and we know what their expectations of us are, and to work out and officially formalize those systems and get those going so that they can start living under exempt status. And that's on the verge of happening right now. It's close enough so that in the next 2 months we'll be able to talk about it, and two really big profile, really major profile projects will come out as Hacker Foundation projects in the next 2 months. Our secondary goal is figuring out who's out there, who has projects, who wants to take advantage of a lot of the things offered by exempt status, networking with them and, launching them as, new 501c3 projects within the auspices of the Hacker Foundation. Those are the two goals that I see operationally right now. And a lot of that is the work that I'm doing. A lot of that is the work that the vice president's doing out in San Francisco. And we've added another board member, Jake Applebaum, who just moved to Toronto in Canada. And the three of us are working on that right now. Does that answer your question?
And we're also finding our message. We're finding our voice. We don't know how well this sells to people yet. We haven't done a lot of these where we get up and say, sustainability, equality, go serve the greater good. That's different than saying, dude, I'm going to show you how to pwn the NSA. It's, and those are different things. And so it's not a discussion we always have. We're talking about fucking shit up and drinking beer. Yes, sir.
Other assumptions, you guys have day
jobs? Yes.
You do have day jobs.
Yes. Unfortunately, I have a horrible day job.
I'm sure. It's sort of like T-Mobile evening and weekend. When do you think you'd be able to donate all of your time or get enough money out of this so that you guys could work 100%.
Well, let me think. I got to check with the accountant.
Yeah.
2 million?
I'm just wondering if it's something that's like where you're shooting for.
The thing is that I don't think anybody in the Hacker Foundation is shooting for us to be able to leave our day jobs and work on this full time. Because, we don't want to draw salaries and draw money from the community so that we can pay ourselves to work on it full time. That's money that projects need to buy computers. That's money projects need to have conventions. And I don't see, I don't really see a full-time staff or having even, a 1 or 2% administrative overhead. A lot of these really, really big charities.
Red Cross.
Spend 10, 15% of their donation money on administrative stuff, which I think is incredibly wasteful.
I want you guys to make a salary. I want you guys to work full time doing what you're doing because.
Sweet.
I need you guys to do that. I need you guys to fill that role. I'm like, thank God someone's thinking about that. Good. You should do that all the time. I think that your value as a community and to everyone is better suited to doing what you're doing now than whatever, owing you're doing elsewhere.
Well, that feels. Does anyone else think this is a good idea? that one voice is really nice to hear because we're like, I hope they like this idea.
And the thing is, especially over the past couple months as we've been working these projects, they've become full-time jobs in and of themselves on top of my accounting job, which this time of year is very.
Interesting.
Very, very.
He was doing taxes last night, by the way.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I went from the I went from the NY 2600 party back up to my room to go finish some tax returns for people that I should have finished before I left for here, but that's another story.
Yeah.
And, we my goal, you know, a lot of people go into charity and think, oh, well, I'm going to end up doing this full time, get a lot of money and do that. That's not really on the radar of anybody at the Hacker Foundation right now. I mean, ideally, it'd be nice if we found some people, mostly retirees, you know, who could work on it full time and treat it like a full time job, but not draw a full time salary for it. That the only thing really holding us back from that is the fact that we think that any money that we would be spending on administrative overhead is better spent elsewhere.
Yeah, we're very much in big bartering.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're very much in big bartering steel mode right now. But we like it. It keeps us young and lean.
To point out that, you know, what we have here, this representation of the core values that we feel that the Hacker Foundation should be supporting, I mean, altruism, that's really what it is. We don't do this with the expectation of, you know, making money. We're just trying to help make things better.
Yeah. So we're getting the,
Just that one quick question?
No. We'll talk to him later. I've talked to him all weekend.
Okay.
But quick. I have a very long list. I'll show it to you.
The short answer is
everybody
who will collaborate with us.
Except that guy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think the parts where you talk went well.